Okay, I'm calling Ben.
A little bit late. Hopefully he won't be too upset with me. He's usually pretty cool about it, but I don't know. I texted him and he didn't text me back about it. And also I'm calling him and he's not picking up. Oh, he did. Hey, Ben.
Hey, how's it going? I picked up.
Hey, I thought you were mad.
No, it was one of those instances where I was doing something else, and when I saw the call come through, I like pushed buttons that I shouldn't have pushed, and so it took me a while to recover. How are you?
Oh, good, good, good. To explain to Ben and the people at home, I sent Ben a message that said, "Hey, can we start a little later? I'm eating soup." So here's what happened. I timed everything, you know, right, so that I could be done with my soup in time for the podcast, but I neglected to give cool down time for the soup.
Oh, you gotta,
and so it was.
You gotta put in the cool down time.
Now, as people who know me well, basically you and Jennifer, know, I have a bad habit of eating hot food before it's cooled down. It is a thing that I do. It's not a trademark necessarily, but it is a dumb thing. And so I'm eating the soup and I'm like, oh wait, too hot, too hot. And so my mouth tastes burny now.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Hopefully it won't we won't be able to hear the burny mouth sensation over today's show. And I actually just I didn't get your text. I just now saw them when I when I looked at my phone. So,
well, there you go.
Hey.
Hey, is the snow gone over there or is there still snow?
Well, there's
for those of you sorry.
The snow that remains are just in piles on the sides of the streets. So it's mostly gone from the streets and from the sidewalks. But, you know, there's piles of it left.
Seattle had a bit of a snowpocalypse.
We did. Yeah, it was exciting.
My Instagram feed was full of people from Seattle posting pictures of snow and themselves in it.
Yeah. I would. I'll say that. First off, I really like snow days. I like the snow. Because I live and work within walking distance of one another. I did not get any snow days. I didn't elect to just stay home. I trudged up the hill to Annex to work on the latest episode of The Panel Jumper, which The Panel Jumper Live is Friday, February 22nd, so I got to get the episode ready for that.
Hey, that's by the time this is out, that will be...
It'll be next... It'll be this week, actually.
This
Friday.
So
I've been working on that.
Look for that.
But yeah, I think I read a statistic that said that we received more snow in a single month, or in February. I think it's more so in February than we have in the last 50 years.
Hey!
So, yeah.
You just...
It was quite impressive.
Because, you know, and the reason because we talked about a time when it snowed when we were there, and that was a pretty big snowfall.
Was that the 2008?
Yeah. Or whatever.
The previous snowpocalypse.
So that would include that snowpocalypse.
No. So this is...
Wouldn't it?
I said. The snowpocalypse was in November... But this is the most snow in February.
Oh, okay. No, maybe I just wasn't listening to that part. It's possible.
So, I was actually really impressed with the forecasting because they were pretty much spot on. Every time they said it was going to snow, it snowed. Every time they said it was going to stop snowing, it stopped snowing. There was only one moment when they were off a little bit, and it was Monday, they said the snow was going to turn to rain at about 4 o'clock in downtown Seattle.
Aha.
And the snow did not turn to rain until about 7 or 8 o'clock in downtown Seattle. And
well,
that's like the only forecasting misstep.
So, speaking of forecasting, for tomorrow... Oh, wait. Actually, Ben, we should talk about this because we never really have. We're in kind of two times. There's the time that the listener is listening to this, right?
Yeah.
And I think that the listener probably thinks of this podcast as taking place at the time that it's downloaded. Not necessarily at the time that they've downloaded it, but at the time it's available for download.
Okay, yeah.
Because it says, you know, the date on the podcast will be the date that it's available, not the date that we're recording it.
Correct.
So we're kind of in between times. Like, for example, the panel jumper will be this Friday.
Yeah.
As far as they're concerned. And yet we're at a time where this Friday is actually 2 days away.
Correct.
From when we're recording.
Yeah.
So,
we're a little
here's why I mentioned it.
We're a little ahead of the game this week.
Betty's birthday, my daughter's birthday, as previously established, Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
We were going to go to the zoo, but that is not a possibility because the St. Louis Zoo is not open on Valentine's Day, which is good for the workers of the St. Louis Zoo. But and by the way, this is crazy. St. Louis Zoo, St. Louis Science Center, St. Louis Art Museum, all are free.
That is crazy.
You do not have to pay to enter. The way that they get, you know, they get you, if you want to say, parking costs money.
Ah.
And so parking like at the Science Center.
Parking's
$65. No, $10.
Okay.
It's not a lot. But the idea is, if you're from St. Louis, you can find other ways to get there than driving.
Yeah.
You know, so it's less.
I would not have pegged Valentine's Day to be a zoo holiday.
Yeah, the City Museum isn't open on Valentine's Day either.
Huh.
But it all works out because we're going to go to my parents' house.
Well, there you go. It's a good thing your parents are open on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, exactly. And so...
I know there was that letter writing campaign when they closed that 1 year.
So let's see. Even though Jennifer won't be listening to this until after Valentine's Day, I don't know if I want to say. This is the thing: is I took stock of her interest. Okay,
spit
full
it out.
Disclosure.
Yeah,
I had plans. Those plans were thwarted by my teeth.
By your teeth.
I'll explain. Yeah. We had a surplus of.
Teeth.
Of money.
Ah.
We had already gotten Betty's gifts, and I had plans for something to get Jennifer. But my dentist appointment, which was on Monday, I don't know how to say it, revealed, I guess that's a... revealed a problem with my mouth that, after insurance, is in the multiple hundreds of dollars, which ate up all the surplus, which I was going to use for the cooler thing. So I have done a lower budget cool thing, which is still cool, but not as cool as a, you know, more budget you have to work with, the cooler things can be.
I'm sorry that your mouth ate, no pun intended, all the savings. But hearing that dental work is multiple hundreds of dollars, I was expecting you to say multiple thousands of dollars because dental work can get pretty pricey.
Yeah. So good insurance helps.
Yeah, totally.
But can I tell you, do you mind being a little bit grossed out as to what's going on?
Okay, here's a trigger warning to our listeners. Paul's about to explain what's wrong with his mouth.
Okay, so in the back left corner of my mouth... And hey, maybe people will use this to identify me by dental records at some point. Back left corner of my mouth is a crown. I have a crown.
Which you've had for how long?
At least 10 years,
okay.
Most likely more. And what happened was it used to be porcelain, but it broke while I was eating. And so they put a gold crown back there. Now, in the intervening time, porcelain crowns have gotten much stronger. As my dentist put it, you could hit one into a board with a hammer and then pull it out and put it back into the tooth. So that's good for me.
Let's hope they don't try that sometime.
But here's the thing. Because it's gold, and this might be true with porcelain as well, I don't know. It wasn't apparent that there was a cavity under the crown until the damage got so much that there is now a space between my gum and the crown.
Well, so the tooth basically, I don't want to say dissolved, but just decayed enough.
Yeah. Yeah, that now there's a gap. Wow. And they can see it.
And you did you not notice this as it was occurring? Did you?
Okay. Didn't so hurt? Again, this is where it doesn't hurt. This is where it gets a little bit gross. But every once in a while, like that area will be bleeding a little bit.
Okay.
And I now understand what's happening. The blood is coming from under the crown.
Yeah.
And out.
This is like
so that's gross.
Like not after you've eaten, not after you've lost, just randomly?
Yeah, just randomly. Yeah, exactly. So,
huh.
So, I mean, it struck me as being weird, but it's one of those things that's kind of in the back of your mind. Especially if your dental things have been bad in general.
Yeah.
You know, so here's the thing. This is what they said. We don't know what we're going to find when we take the crown off.
Oh, my goodness.
It might be that we have to pull whatever's left.
Yeah.
We might have to do a root canal. Or we might be able to just clean it up and put the crown back on.
And they haven't done any of this yet. They just discovered the problem, right. And so you have another appointment to go in and for the not quite surgery, but the procedure.
Right. So depending on what they find, there might be more cost.
Right.
As well.
Yeah.
I'm hoping. Now, one of the things that happened to me with dentists, I don't know if this happened with you, but do you have like gas or anything like that when you go to the dentist? Do you ever?
No. The only time I've been gassed is when I had my wisdom teeth pulled.
I used to get gas all the time, but one thing that I noticed that would happen, and please, if you were a dentist of mine, I'm not accusing you specifically of impropriety.
Uh-oh.
But and I've never been gassed with this dentist. This dentist has always been good, upfront, everything like that.
Yeah.
But one thing I noticed in the past, so they'd numb me up, they'd gas me, and then they'd bring in more forms and say, "Hey, it looks like we're gonna have to do a little bit more. Can you please sign these forms?"
Ah, convenient.
Yeah, where. You know, I think that there's a law against signing a contract when you're drunk. I don't know for sure.
There probably...
But if there's not, there should be.
Exactly.
So, same sort of thing. Not drinking, but, you know, the nitrix.
Yeah. You are not of sound mind and body.
So, but I don't know, man. This is going to be something. And I don't know if I want to be awake for it. Whatever it turns out to be. So... Anyway, so less money,
yeah,
but
sorry.
Still fun. Yeah.
I'm glad you have dental insurance. I only got...
Yeah. Oh, that is exactly what I was going to say. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. I know that I did. I could hear you saying something. It's this delay, Ben.
Sure.
The just the really quick thing... it's better to, now all of a sudden I'm wiped out, than I don't have money for this procedure.
Right.
So I am in a better spot than I was when I wrote March, for example. Our wonderful song March is all about how you don't know what to do because you don't have the money that you need.
For our listener who hasn't seen or heard that song, I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, and there's a line about a look at you with your teeth so white, and that pretty face, and all that kind of stuff. That is very much me being jealous of people who don't have dental problems.
Yeah.
It's a very literal thing. So you were saying you don't have dental insurance?
Well, I do have dental insurance now only because the Affordable Care Act started offering dental insurance within the last couple years.
Hey,
and
awesome.
I've been able to get it. But I did not have insurance, dental insurance from, when was the last time I had a full plan? I think that was in 2003. So for almost 14 years, I did not have dental insurance. And so I still went to the dentist every, you know, twice a year, paid for it out of pocket. Fortunately, did not have anything major happen. I think I had, I think I may have had one cavity in that time. I know that in that time I had to have a tooth fixed because one of my fillings had broken.
Oh, I hate that.
And,
oh, so bad.
And so I go to the same dentist that I go that I've been going to for the almost 30 years now. So I still drive down to Olympia to go to the dentist. So they know my teeth really well. And these are the these are the people who have put all these fillings in, right? Because I had a lot of I had a lot of fillings when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
Just because I had bad oral hygiene habits back then, and but fillings apparently have a lifespan.
Yep.
And so
it's true.
I get to look forward to having about 5 to 7 fillings replaced in the next 20 years or so.
Yeah, there's a good chance that I will have nothing but crowns by the time I'm, you know, 60-something.
When they were talking to me about this, about, you know, there's nothing wrong now, but they're keeping an eye on them.
Yeah.
I'm like, are the ones that you replace them with going to last me the rest of my life? I'm like, has dental technology
increased and,
so much that... fillings are permanent, and it's basically it's what they were trying to feed me was that it was it's basically physics. Your fillings expand and contract with the heat of your mouth, and in doing so, all that acts as like a slow vibration that they slowly like
degrade.
They slowly they don't degrade, but they get themselves free from your tooth. They wiggle free.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. And that sort of is kind of how it goes, where they kind of drop out sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, who knows? I'm hoping that in 10, 20 years, you're going to be able to grow a new set of teeth. That would be fun.
I know. I'm always amazed at the human body's ability to repair itself, except when it comes to teeth.
Yeah, I was thinking about this today, actually. Go figure. How much how mystical teeth are. And by that I mean, like, you know, the tooth fairy gives you money for them. They fall out of your mouth and then new ones grow back. You know, that's kind of crazy. The concept of bones that go through your skin and then, you know, they last after you die. You know, the dentist puts it in little treasure chests. There's just something about teeth that I don't know, they're kind of freaky. Oh, and how much does the abduction experience you know, mirror going to the dentist? There's a bright light. There are people around you. You know, they're working on you. The sound of that drill.
The anal probes.
You know, yeah, exactly. How your butt feels weird after you come out of the anesthesia. All that stuff. You know, it's completely...
I remember, speaking of terrible teeth stories, one of my biggest fears is just like being somewhere and having a tooth fall out. And I have dreams about this all the time where like a tooth is like loose. I'm trying to shove it back in. But
yes,
I was at the movies. A bunch of us went to the movies, and this was years ago. And
was I there?
Jillian, I don't know. I can't remember if you were there or not. But Jillian Jorgensen was there. And right before the movie start, one of her teeth fell out.
Wow.
She had a tooth, and I was sitting next to her, and she's like, my tooth just fell out. I'm like, do you need to go to a dentist? But it was like 9 o'clock at night. So she just held on to it and watched the movie and probably dealt with it later.
Do you remember what the movie was?
I don't. I wish I could.
Yeah, because that sounds familiar, but I don't know.
I want to say this was probably in 2001 or 2002.
Yeah, there's a chance I was there, probably.
Yeah.
Because we went to the movies all the time during that period.
Yeah.
It is weird how different life was at certain stages. Like, you think about something, you're like, why did we even do that? And then you realize, oh, right, Google wasn't around, so we had to go to the library because we didn't know what this thing was. You know, I think about the day Clown College disappeared. Do you remember this? Have I told you this story?
The day what disappeared?
Clown College?
Clown College.
Yeah, so...
There's no more Clown College?
Well, this is the thing. I graduated from college.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know what I wanted to do, and I decided that I wanted to go to Clown College,
okay.
Which I knew was in Baraboo, Wisconsin. And so I wanted to write to them and find out, you know, how to get more information about applying and stuff. And nothing, absolutely no information. When you dialed information for Baraboo, Wisconsin, they had no record of the Clown College.
Huh.
And I looked up different places and... Yeah, nothing at all. And it turns out...
Like it never existed.
For the time period that I was looking for the Clown College, it was in Florida. They had moved to Florida. And then they moved back to Wisconsin later on.
Hmm.
But yeah, at that time, there was no way to Google to find out where it had gone. It just had,
right.
As far as I knew, disappeared. And no one that I called in the area knew anything about it. You know, there. I called information. I dialed some other places in Baraboo, and they're like, "No, I don't know what you're talking about." Which, in retrospect, seems really weird.
Boy, you were that close to going to clown school.
Yeah, exactly. How much different would it have been had I done? Probably not that much. I'm thinking, but who knows? Maybe.
Let's see, Clown College or the Air Force.
Yeah, that really honestly was how it went, and I ended up going to the Air Force, which it's interesting now, because I think about how 4 years isn't really that long.
Right.
And if I had it to do over again, I think I would have been able to make it, but at the time, there was no way.
No.
It sounds weird, but I don't think that you should actually get to go into the armed forces until you're in your 30s and are more mature. Same thing with college. Actually, until you're 30, you should be able to just, you know, do whatever.
Well, then what do you do up until then? You graduate high school, then what? You just start working? You find a job? You travel? What do you do?
No, you shouldn't get a job either. You really shouldn't do any. Here's the thing. You should, between the time that you're 14 and 30, you should be in prison, probably, I'm guessing. Peace Corps. Something. Some place where you're away from other people.
I can see the Peace Corps, because with the Peace Corps, you can do some learning and maturing. Maybe not so much in prison.
Oh, hey, if you sent the gold... how much do you know about... Oh, sorry.
If you set the goalposts that far forward, where you like people aren't mature until they're 30, well, then people aren't going to be mature until they're 40.
See, that is a very good point. That's a problem. What do you know about Liberia? How much do you know about it?
Not much.
Okay, so I'm going to give you my cliff notes on Liberia. This is something that I know a little bit about, and the reason that I mention it is because you know how we're talking about. Knowing stuff without looking it up.
Yes. Sort of the thesis of our podcast.
So people were talking about the imperial system that we use.
Correct.
Miles, inches, that kind of thing.
Feet.
And somebody said, what other places use it? And I said, oh, I know this, Liberia. And I knew it just like you know anything, you know, like... You know, 2 + 2 = 4. I was like, oh, Liberia.
You learned it once and you retained that knowledge.
Turns out it's also Myanmar, once known as Burma.
Correct.
Also uses the imperial system. But here's the thing about Liberia that's so interesting. It was formed by freed Africans from the United States.
Hence the name.
They went and they formed Liberia. It is still, like, the people, like, their accents are kind of American sometimes. Because here's the other thing. There were native peoples there as well. So things didn't, like, it's not exactly like it was an empty space that they just moved to. It's off the west. The west coast of Africa, or it's on the west coast of Africa, and this is the weird part. A lot of their stuff was based on, like, the antebellum South.
Okay.
So they built houses like they had there,
like big sugar plantations.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, oh, right, because, of course, you know...
That's what they thought houses looked like.
The White House was... Well, not just that, but you're using your slave labor force to build stuff, so they would already know how to build those houses.
Right.
That kind of thing. Lots of civil war and stuff like that happening... has happened there, lots of government corruption, things like that. But the big thing, right now, their president, whose name I don't know, but is a football or soccer star for Liberia. And this is apparently the third time that he's run for president, and he finally won.
Ah.
So anyway, just a little bit about Liberia.
Goal!
I have a friend who's from Nigeria who shared a bit of information that I hesitate to state, but I will anyway. Keep in mind that I do not know this for a fact.
All right.
And he said this to me very conspiratorially.
What did he say?
Women from Liberia have larger behinds than women from other countries on the west coast of Africa.
This is just a sample size of the West Africa?
Exactly.
Okay.
And he said that it was sort of a party trick that you could do.
What?
That if you knew that somebody was from West Africa, you could say, I bet you I can tell you what country you're from. And then you would say Liberia. They'd go, yes. How do you know? And you don't tell them.
Jeez.
But I found that interesting.
I
myself am not going to try.
No, I was just going to say, that's a party trick I will not be partaking in.
Yes. And again, I'm keeping my friend anonymous.
But come on, how many Nigerian friends do you have? We can figure this out.
No, don't do it. Anyway, so speaking of, getting things right or getting things wrong or whatever.
Yeah.
Jennifer Fact Checker, the biggest fact checker that this podcast has, also happens to be my wife. Asked me when we were going to be recording the podcast. I think as a hint that she expected me not to be doing the podcast on Valentine's Day, which of course I didn't. But I'm wondering if she asked because she was going to submit corrections. And if there aren't any, that's fine.
I just pulled it up and it looks like there are corrections.
Hey! Okay, so... As you've noted, we try to do things without looking it up in Google and stuff like that. That's sort of I know it's weird that this podcast doesn't really seem to have a premise, but that's the closest premise that we have, is that people are getting dumb, but they don't know it because they can look stuff up. And we, as human beings, mistake being able to look stuff up with knowing things. And so we try to do this podcast, an hour of us talking without looking things up to see how right we are. And when we make mistakes or when more information is needed, you, the listener, can feel free to correct us. Just write to us at bensemail@yahoo.com@gmail.com.
Yes, sir.
And we will do our best to put what you say in the next episode or thereabouts.
Or thereabouts.
And it looks like Jennifer Fact Checker has written in with some corrections. So we will now do our segment. Corrections.
Ding. All right. We were talking about the Super Bowl commercials, and I had mentioned that I had heard, see, I didn't see these commercials, but I'd heard that a big theme on these from the companies that paid for ad spots was that they bragged about how they contribute to the community and
yes.
and how good they are doing, how much good they are doing for their community. And my point was they're spending $3.5 million per 30-second spot. Spend that money on your community. You know, I'm doubting
yes.
that the amount that they're spending is more than the amount that they're paying for the Super Bowl ads. So apparently Anheuser-Busch, which is also always a big Super Bowl commercial presence,
yes.
was one of these companies that said, we do good for the community. So number one, getting a dollar amount on what Anheuser-Busch spent on helping people get access to clean water is difficult. They sent 238,000 cans, yes, cans, beer cans filled with water, of water to St. Louis, Flint, and Oklahoma City. I don't know why they sent it to St. Louis, because they're
based there. Well, okay,
I can
tell you a little bit. There are areas in St. Louis that are not good, and they probably need some water.
Yeah. All right, fair enough.
And my guess is that, and I'm just putting this out here, they probably packaged the water up send to Flint,
yeah.
made a big deal about it, and someone local said, hey, you should do something for here, too.
So anyway,
I don't know if that's true,
so,
but that's a guess.
She says, Flint got it due to the water crisis. They got 50,000 cans. The other 188,000 went to St. Louis and Oklahoma City after major floods. So there you go.
There we are.
She goes on to say, I can say I doubt it costs as much or more than the $5.25 million, not $3.5 million, which is the number that I heard, but she says it's $5.25 million per 30-second spot just to air the ad during the Super Bowls. So, yeah, so chances are they spent more on the ad as propaganda to tell everybody how much good they are doing than
yes.
how much they spent doing good.
If I were going to be them, I would spin it to like maybe we hope to inspire the other people watching. That's what I would
yeah.
say.
And you know,
that's totally,
it's always possible they just said something like that. Like I said, I didn't watch the Super Bowl and I haven't seen any of the commercials. So who knows?
Yeah.
We also talked.
Right.
yes.
Oh, no, no. I was like, all right.
All right.
That's
moving
all
on. We also talked about Common Core.
Oh, yeah.
So number two, Common Core. Oh, sweet Jesus, Common Core. It's a set of standards that define what students should know, or in other words, competencies, at each grade level, kindergarten through 12th grade. It's also used to evaluate school success. Additionally, it's a controversial load of bullcrap that is used to punish school students and teachers, as it does not allow for inequities in funding, culture, and community resources. In other words, F Common Core. I didn't know what IOW meant at first, but I figured it out. Jennifer's not a big fan of Common Core, I can see.
Yeah. Well, again, to reiterate, Betty came from a Common Core school. When she got to this school district, which do they don't do it, as far as I know.
Well, that leads us to number three. Paul,
oh, okay.
They do use Common Core here. It's
okay.
It's just applied in the classroom differently. So remember, Seattle is the most underfunded, effed up school system ever. It was held in contempt of Congress and lost its federal funding for not meeting basic standards. True that. See above, inequities in funding, culture, etc. Yeah, Seattle school district's in a heap of pain right now.
I feel as though this is the first time that I've ever been corrected retroactive. Like a correction for the previous week also corrected me right on the show. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
I believe not only do I repeat myself, but also I figure she maybe would anticipate that I would state the wrong thing again. So there we go. They do use Common Core.
Yeah.
They just use it differently.
They use it differently.
And the math is more table-based.
Yeah. So,
multiplication tables.
Moving on, we also talked about the phrase "jack of all trades, master of none." And
yes,
I didn't know there was more. You couldn't remember what it was. So number four, jack of all trades, master of none, but oftentimes better than the master of one.
Yeah. See, I was close. So listen to the episode again. I'm real close.
So jack of all trades was the initial phrase coined in Elizabethan English, meaning a generalist who is good at doing a wide variety of things well. It is found in print in Green's Gross Worth of Wits in 1562, referring to our beloved William Shakespeare. How the heck? Interestingly, this is the first ever mention of William in print. Master of None was added as a sort of insult later, with the final bit coming later as a riposte.
Aha. Well, that's pretty great.
Little history lesson there for the phrase. And number five, and you're probably going to have to help me on the pronunciation of this. Betty says, Nigomblepot forever. Shipping Enigma and Oswald Cobblepot, the Riddler and Penguin. So Nigma.
Yeah, I don't know.
Nigmobblepot.
I don't know how to pronounce it. Yeah. Betty might be upset with her business being aired like this.
Huh?
But we will check with Betty.
Is this something that she said during as yelling for Betty?
Okay. I'm trying to find the best way to. So I mentioned that she had dyed her hair black? Had I mentioned that?
No, you have not.
Okay. Well, Betty dyed her hair black, and I was going to mention why she did it.
She did it on her own? Like you came home one day and it was suddenly black?
No. She asked for it.
Okay.
But I was going to posit a reason and she told me not to. And so I don't, and it's tied to the thing that Jennifer was talking about. So we'll talk to her during the Yelling for Betty segment about this.
Alrighty.
And find out. Yes. But yeah. That's the weird Bradgelina or whatever for the Riddler and the Penguin.
And I've just heard of this phrase recently and never really understood what it meant on the outset, but now I do. When you ship two people, you're placing them in a relationship.
Yes, exactly.
Where did that come from?
It used to be, it used to be called slash fiction.
What?
And the reason that it was called slash fiction, right? This is back when people would actually write stories, and they still do. Slash fiction would be like Kirk slash Spock, right? The idea that you would write it as Kirk and then the slash Spock, meaning that those were the two people involved in the relationship, right? Slash fiction. Shipping, much like how Twitter
allows you to write the equivalent of a short story without any of that pesky writing by just staying the concept and that being a creative act in and of itself. Shipping is imagining a relationship between two fictional characters without any of that pesky slash fiction writing. You can just state that they're like, oh, wouldn't it be great if these two people date? And then you just imagine the dating without actually writing any stories down.
Because writing is hard.
You know, it is. I'm finding out, I mean, I'm thinking about this. That really is, okay, and I'm sorry that I keep starting saying things and stopping, because I'm finishing them in my head, and I realize I'm not speaking them. Okay, here's the idea.
Welcome to having a conversation with Paul.
When you and I think of an idea, and we write it down, and let's say the idea is, it's Jaws, but it takes place in space. If we then saw somebody who did a movie with a shark in space called Space Shark, we could say, and I quote, ah, oh, they stole our idea. Or, oh, that was our idea.
Yeah.
As I got older and I started to do more things, it struck me that just having the idea isn't necessarily unique enough to say they stole my idea.
Right.
You actually have to do something with it.
Because as we've learned, ideas can generate organically from multiple different places at the same time.
Right. And I think that Twitter showed that in a way that lots of people maybe didn't really think possible. I know in Twitter, people used to say all the time that somebody stole their tweet, but it's starting to, at least when I left, it was starting to turn that people were starting to think, yeah, you know, we all keep, like, and really what happened was famous comedians would write to each other and say, hey, I'm sorry, I stole this. Oh, no, that's cool. I know that you didn't, yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
You didn't steal it. You just came up with the same idea.
And so then lower level comedians like us are like, oh, okay, well, if they can do that, that makes sense, I guess. But sort of the idea that, I mean, and this is the weird thing. Again, Twitter made it so that if I have an idea, right, and I just write, hey, wouldn't it be cool if Voltron was made of meat? If somebody then drew something that said Meet Voltron, I could say, hey, that was my idea. That's my intellectual property. You took it from me.
Yeah.
I mean, but is that really enough? You know, is writing, you know, a sentence enough to claim ownership of the thing?
I don't know.
Or is it more like...
That's something for lawyers to figure out.
Yeah. Like trademark. Like, okay, yes, if someone else writes your tweet, that's not a big deal. But if I do a three-act play based on your tweet, have I stolen your idea? Or is it, you know, free to use? It's a really interesting thing that I don't know if I have the answer to.
I don't think there is an answer to that. I mean, I'm sure a number of lawsuits have started because people thought that, like, a major studio or a famous writer stole their idea, even though the studio or writer took an idea that's similar and developed it.
Yeah,
but there's, I mean,
that's right.
I have no idea if, you know, what the precedent is for settling these types of lawsuits. There was one thing. There's like, at one point, Paul Allen went through and just started suing everybody because he felt that his ideas were being used to make money. Like things like the internet and Wi-Fi and networking, right? Because, you know, he was instrumental in developing a lot of the systems, but then they went on, other people took it and developed it more and more and more. And so I think he, like, he sued Google because, you know, he developed, like, the first internet rudimentary search engine and now wanted a piece of it.
Oh.
This is after, this was at, well after I worked there when this whole thing went down. And I was only reminded of it after he had after he'd passed away, and I watched a 60-minute interview with him. And it was an interview on the TV show, 60 minutes. It wasn't an hour long. And and like he felt that a lot of this stuff was his intellectual property, and he wanted to be, you know, one of the wealthiest men in the world, wanted to be compensated for his contribution.
See, now, you know, I think about this, right? When I was a kid, let's see, this would be when I was in third grade. So that's what? 19, in the early 80s, whatever. I had to write sentences when I got in trouble. And so I would write the sentence, and then I would write down. So, like, I will not do this. I will not do this. I will not do this. And then I would start going, I will. You know, just to break up the monotony. And I said to myself at one time, it's too bad that I can't just take this sentence that I've already written and move it down without writing it. If I could just move it down without writing it and move it and move it and move it, I could be done. So basically, I came up with cutting and pasting. Yeah, exactly. Do I get any money for it? No. And why? Because I didn't actually program it. That's where intellectual property gets weird.
There was,
you know?
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast years ago called This Week in Tech. And on one of the episodes, they talked about where they basically came up with the idea for Twitter. Like they were, they talked about when they were in this boardroom and they had a whiteboard and they didn't come up with a name, but they came up with this platform that ran the same way Twitter did and how it would work. But, you know, they were just free, you know, spitballing ideas. Nothing came of it. And then they, you know, 2 or 3 years later, boom, Twitter exists.
Yeah.
Do they have any, you know, did somebody take a picture of this whiteboard? So,
and even if they had, would it have mattered?
Would it have mattered? I don't think in that instance, I don't think it would have. I think the only way that they could say that they had a hand in the development is if one of the people who was like a leading engineer in Twitter's early days was in that room and took
that idea. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's like people who say that. Some musician ripped off another band.
Yeah.
One of the ways they prove it is if the band that they supposedly ripped off opened for them. You know? Yeah. Like then you can prove that they were there and heard those songs. It's the same thing like, you know, a guy in Chicago who's a sketch comedy guy, right? This is back in the early 90s, I was in a play with him, and he was talking about how his sketch group came up with Chia Head, and then somebody from Saturday Night Live was at the show, saw it, and then they saw Chia Head on Saturday Night Live later.
Right.
But there was no way to really call them out or actually sue them for it.
Yeah.
And they said that Saturday Night Live does that all the time. And that kind of informed me a little bit of, yeah, it's the making of the thing that really makes it yours. You know, so if you were to screenplay and somebody else made a movie and one of the scenes from your screenplay is in that movie, then you got something, maybe. You know, but if you just... I had the idea of
but
a premise for a movie.
Exactly. And you tweet a unique idea for a movie, and then someone goes and makes that movie. You know, and you can prove, I think this is the important part, you can prove that they got the idea for the movie from your tweet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how I think James Cameron ended up getting sued by Harlan Ellison, was that in an interview, James Cameron said that he took the ideas from a Harlan Ellison story.
Well, that was just his dumb stupidity.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is that, you know, if you're being honest, right, and this is something that I advocate, you know how I already said, you know, artists shouldn't really have to worry about making money off of their art.
Right.
Art shouldn't, like, you shouldn't necessarily try it. But I'm going to not backtrack on that statement, but I'm going to add something else, which is this. If you like something that somebody did and you want to make something off of it, you should involve them.
Right.
I mean, that's just good decency, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know.
And, you know, art is not created in a vacuum. And so collaboration yields great results.
Yeah. And again, if you're getting paid... If you are getting paid, the people you're working with should also get paid. I think that's a great... I don't mean to deride that idea.
Right.
What I'm saying is, if you're getting paid and the people that work with you don't care if they get paid or not, then that's...
Can I get that
up
in
to
writing?
You guys. What do you, no.
Oh, I just made $1 million with this idea you helped me with, but you said you didn't want any money, so I guess, you know, bully for you.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is that you need to be upfront with them that you're going to try to make as much money as you can off of it.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's the other thing is I don't want to say, oh yeah, I'll do this. Oh, that's great. You find out that they made $500,000. And you're like, dude, what the heck? That, and you're like, oh, you said that you were doing it for free. That's not the same thing.
That happened with...
Absolutely not the same thing.
That happened with the movie Paranormal Activity. It was...
really?
Yeah, it was just this indie feature that was filmed for a minuscule budget. And the two leads, the man and the woman lead actors, did it for... Like, I think they were paid... I'm going to pull a number out of my hat, but they were paid, like, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 a piece to be in this movie. And the movie went on to be a blockbuster. And they sued the production company for more money. Now, I don't know the result of this. I'm hoping that they got more money. But Paranormal Activity went off to be like a successful franchise. Now, if you tell me that these two lead actors, who basically are the movie, the only ones in the movie, if all they walked away with was $7,000 a piece, then something's broken in the system.
Let me ask you a question, and I know this might sound weird, but let's say that was a documentary.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I know it's not, but let's say it is.
Okay.
And those people. The movie is about them, but they don't get compensated. Would you feel okay about that?
I think it
if they said, I just wanted to tell my story, I don't care about making any money.
Well, if they said that, like if they said that.
Yeah.
And even after the movie goes on to make millions and becomes a franchise and they still say that. I'm fine with not forcing a giant check down their throat.
Right, right, right. But do you think the people that made the documentary then, if their documentary does well and makes money? Here's my thing. I don't know if documentaries even make any money. I don't know if that's a thing.
I'm sure
I don't think it
do.
Is. But if the documentary made any money, do you think the filmmakers owe the people anything? I don't think they do.
I think
it'd be nice.
I think it would be a gesture of good faith.
Yeah.
To throw some money their way. You know, Because at a certain point, like, how much do you need?
Right.
There was a, I think we've talked about the Fyre Festival documentaries before. We even yeah. might have even already mentioned this. But in one of them, in the Netflix one, there was the story of the gal who owned the restaurant who was out basically her whole life savings. And yeah. thanks to the documentary, a GoFundMe was started, and it raised, I think the last I saw it, was over $100,000.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So I'm sure this person didn't expect to get any money from the documentary, and the filmmakers did not expect or did not intend to pay her. I mean, they probably paid her for her time to film the documentary, yeah. but weren't going to reimburse her for any of the expenses that she was out. But hey, you know, sometimes things happen. And this time, yeah. that lightning struck in a bottle, and now this restaurant owner has probably more money than she spent, I hope.
I think one of the differences between actors and people in documentaries, I could be wrong about this, obviously, but I feel like a documentary filmmaker can't demand that you do things over and over and over. You know what I mean? Like part of the thing about getting paid as an actor in a film is that you're being paid for like long hours and sitting around and all that kind
of
stuff.
You're also being paid to do something very specific.
Yeah, whereas I think that and I don't know for sure, but I think a documentary would be more of a shotgun approach, you know?
Yeah.
You give them a lot. You might take a long time to talk to them, but you don't have like a bunch of different takes.
Because what's the defining line between documentary and I guess fiction? If as a documentary filmmaker, you're like, you know, that was great when you answered the phone and the cop told you that your son was in an auto accident, but I didn't get the audio on that. Can you do that again?
Oh man, yeah, I don't know. I mean, for like on reality television, that can happen. You know, if somebody steps on somebody else's,
yeah, I think I'm separating documentary from reality TV.
Yeah, but there's a similarity. I think it depends on the filmmaker.
It's got a similar aesthetic, but the intent behind it is different, I feel.
Well, I'm talking about the similarity of, you know, I think that some people are very in the moment and raw as far as documentaries go. But I think some, like, I don't know who they would be, but I think I want to say, I don't want to get in trouble about this, but I think that Michael Moore was thought of as kind of orchestrating things more than, like, that was one of the complaints that people have had.
Gotcha.
About it.
I guess, I don't know. I guess I could see that. I didn't get that in watching his movies. Although I think
And like I said, I don't know for sure.
I've only seen Roger and Me and Bowling for Columbine. I haven't seen any of his other movies.
Yeah, but the idea that, okay, there's a difference between filming something as it happens, right?
Yeah.
And setting up a situation so that something will happen.
But we can also add in another layer, and that is how you edit all of that together.
Right.
Because you can totally manipulate what the intent of the scene.
Yes. and
that's a discussion for another day.
Speaking of totally manipulating the intent of the scene, hey, Benny!
Oh, God. I think if we ever need to have a best of episode where, like, you and I aren't able to get together, it's just going to be a supercut of all of your segues into yelling for Betty.
That might be it. Okay, Betty, so a very specific thing. Mm-hmm. How do you pronounce the ship between Penguin and the Riddler?
Why are you asking me this?
Because Mom wrote it to Ben, and Ben didn't know how to pronounce it.
Nygmabopat.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, kind of.
Nig Marvel Pot?
Nig Marvel Pot.
Nig Marvel Pot.
All righty.
All right.
Not, well, there we go.
Let's not draw that out too much. We might get in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And hey, look, that's the time. So, Ben, Betty has hidden her face for some reason.
She's hidden her face or hitting her face?
Hidden.
Hidden.
She's face down.
Okay.
Not looking.
Alrighty.
All right. And she's wearing Pikachu pajamas. It's
Pikajamas?
Very cute. Pikajamas.
Yeah.
Betty, Pikajamas.
And with that.
All right. Well, Ben, obviously, this is a good discussion.
Yeah.
And please keep it wrong.
Keep it wrong, sir.
I beg of you.
Yes. Oh, dear God, keep it wrong.
Yes.
All right.
For the love of Pete, keep it wrong. All right.
Talk to you later.
Thanks, Ben.
Yep.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.